Everybody gonna dance tonight. Everybody gonna feel alright. Everybody gonna.
In actual fact, I'd seen the phrase, and I wasn't quite sure where I'd seen it, but it stuck in my mind. Then I realized it was off my phone, just warning me that there were too many messages and I had to delete some. So I thought, oh, memory almost full. Okay, that's kind of applies to the phone thing. So that's sort of, you know, what happens in the modern world. In a life, you know, your memory is often like a bit overcrowded and you've got to, you know, delete some stuff in order to put some more stuff in it.
I think of everything to be discovered.
It's something you always do, particularly writers. You know, you've got a bunch of information in your memory and you draw on that.
Hi, McCartney fans, and welcome to episode 105 of Two Legs, a Paul McCartney podcast. We are a Paul McCartney talk show mainly dealing with the solo career of Paul McCartney. I'm one of your two co-hosts, Tom Hunyadi, and you may know me from my other show, Talk More Talk, a solo Beatles video cast. And as always, I am joined by my partner in crime, my backwards traveler. He is the one and only Andy Nichols. Andy, what's going on, my friend?
I'm well. Thankfully, my memory is not almost full.
Oh, very good. Very good. I like that. So, you know, we were here last week and we talked briefly about a new McCartney album coming out. We haven't got any news on it yet, but the campaign has started and it's very exciting. And but first, before we get to that, we're going to introduce to you our guest today. And he's coming back. This is... Real excited to have him on the show. He is the co-host of When They Was Fab. He is Ed Chen. Ed Chen, my friend, how are you doing?
Good, good, good. How are you guys? And, of course, today it would be much harder to fill up a device, so memory's nowhere near full.
Back then an iPod would be gone like that, but now we have all this space. Right. Now. Right.
Yep.
Great to have you back on the show, Ed. As like I said, you know, our last show we talked briefly about hoping, you know, that we would get an announcement, but we didn't get the announcement, but we did get the campaign started, and it was to do with Spotify. And if you played McCartney or McCartney 2 and from the app, I guess it was, then you see a hand roll a die, and then up comes number 3. And just, you know, another clue. And then, you know, on the Twitter page, and I think also on the Instagram page, you also see a die. Yeah, all the social has, you know, 1, 2, and 3 die on there. So it's pretty exciting.
Although I have to say, by the time we post this episode, we might have the official announcement.
We might, yes, because we're recording on Sunday the 18th right now. So
right, and you know, we're thinking one day this week it's going to come out.
And we can't forget the one that I think is the most clever, the fake era webpage at McCartney3.com.
The fake, yes. Yeah, the 303.
303, yes. That was brilliant.
Three, yeah. Yeah, so the marketing campaign's doing a good job already, so I'm happy to see that. And, you know, Ed, you know, you guys do, you know, review shows as well. I mean, another album coming up. Are you looking forward to this one as well?
Yeah, this should be fun.
Yeah, yeah. What are you trying to think, you know, what we could expect from a McCartney 3? You know, I don't know if it would be something like in between the, you know, 1 and 2 or something. It's probably going to be... Hopefully it's going to be completely something different, but you know, the first two had a couple instrumentals on there too. I'm kind of thinking maybe we might get an instrumental.
Some of that.
Yeah.
The rumors I'm hearing is that he's doing some of what he did with Frank Sinatra's parties, reworking some of his 70s demos, maybe leaving some as instrumentals and adding lyrics right. to some of them.
Awesome.
That'd be great. Because like you said, he's, you know.
Yeah.
Like you said in that GQ interview, you know, you've got to finish some songs finally, and, you know, we'll go with that.
It'll be a wonderful way to cap a crappy year. It really will.
Yes. Yes, it would. Anyways, today on today's show, as you can see from Andy's shirt and from Ed's background and from what I'm holding up here, we're going to be talking about the album Memory Almost Full. So you got the one that has the DVD in it, right? Or is
yes.
that the bonus disc as well?
DVD.
Guess what? DVD. Okay. See, this one just has the bonus disc in it. So
right.
It has what In Private, Why So Blue, and 222 on it. So
yeah.
But let's just talk a minute about this release. Released in June of 2007, produced by David Kahn. A very good 42 minutes. I like that. This album didn't feel too long in my opinion. This is also the first album from new label Hear Music, which was Starbucks.
The old Starbucks. Recorded
with his touring band. Not all the tracks, but a good chunk. And you know, Ed, give us a little background of 2007. You know, what were you still in? We're still where you are right now when that album came out. And what were your original thoughts?
I was between jobs at that point in time, so it took me a little while to get into Memory Almost Full. But it was a really great record when I did finally get into it. Although I don't like it as much now as I did then, I think.
Okay. Fair enough.
I was really bothered by the brick walling on this disc.
Oh.
You know, this was a matter of the so-called loudness wars, as they call them.
Oh, yeah.
Terrible.
It's a very loud record. And it's funny, too, because, you know, I still put music on my iPod. So when I'm playing my iPod at work or wherever and I'm playing just Paul McCartney music, you can tell when a song from Memory Almost Full is on because it's just the volume. I mean, it's like, whoa, it just, you know, knocks you back for a minute. It's really produced loud or mixed loud, I should say. But
that's where we need a remaster.
This one needs a remixing, remastering from the top bottom. It really does.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool thing, though, is about this is I remember going into a Starbucks and buying this for only $10. So it was,
Really? I've back got, then? Yeah. Like my copy.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was all over the place in Starbucks.
Yeah.
Starbucks even had a. When it first came out, they made their baristas listen to it all day long.
It was playing everywhere. Mm-hmm. It was.
Everywhere, right, exactly. And then I also remember that his image from the Dance Tonight was on a lot of promotional stuff for iTunes as well.
Yeah, iTunes gave away free songs every week. You go into a Starbucks and they give you a card and you a free download, and there were just buckets and buckets of Dance Tonight cards.
Right.
Like dozens of them sitting around. and what you talk about the ad campaign, it's funny. So the main thing about that ad campaign was McCartney and then everybody else who would join in later on, the wide earbuds.
Now, right.
New iPhones, no more earbuds.
Mm. Right.
The 12 that's coming out in a couple months, it's like no more charging, no more earbuds.
It's like, ouch.
Yeah.
Through the McCartney has survived through the introduction and the dissolution of the earbud era.
That's funny. Andy, tell us about 2007, Andy.
2007, Andy. He's in college still, doing his thing, working. I was, you know, totally clued into the album and, you know, obviously a rabid fan. So I was following all his forums and when it was coming out. And remember, again, liking it instantly when it came out. But I'm kind of like Ed. I liked it a lot more back then than I do now. I don't think time has aged the album so well, and given the brickness, the brick walling, and of the album, it's not a bad. I like the album quite a bit, but with so many albums that he's put out after this, and remember coming out off the heels of Chaos and Creation, that bar was set very high, you know. So,
it's definitely a different tone of a record, you know. Chaos.
It is. They're a different tone. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it a lot then. Revisiting it again in preparation for this show, I didn't skip any of the tracks, so you know, it's just a good album that I still enjoy.
Well let's get into that. So McCartney did what, 7 or 8 songs for this album before
Chaos. Him and David Kahn worked on some demos, and then sessions started. And then somewhere down the line, for whatever reason, then that's when McCartney asked George Martin for, who would you recommend for a producer for another project, I guess. And then everything was dropped then for Memory Almost Full. And then he went, head first into the Chaos and Creation sessions. So
I can understand why Nigel Goodrich would not want to do some of these songs.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think the only song on this album that he may be interested would have been Mr. Bellamy, in my opinion.
That would have fit in the Chaos mode a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
And Paul went to Tom York with that song, didn't he? Of Radiohead?
Mr. Bellamy?
Yeah, wasn't that song that he went to Tom York with and asked if he wanted to come and play on it?
No, I didn't hear that one.
Not aware of
that. Would have been really cool.
I believe that is the case.
Excellent.
But Tom York was like, well... I can't play that sort of piano, Paul.
I think it was a case of a lot of it too was, it was only 2 years after Chaos. So a lot of us weren't really, McCartney's going to drop an album, we're going to get it. But it was outside of his usual pattern of releases. Like you got Chaos and then boom, 2 years later, Memory Almost Full.
Right.
So it was just, it snuck up on us. That's the feeling I had at the time. It was like, oh, wow, just got settled with Chaos, and now a whole nother album's coming out. I remember that feeling.
Now, I mean, a lot of people are going to be surprised by McCartney 3.
Right. 2.5 years after
Egypt Station. Two and a half years now. Right. Yeah. So 2007, I was in Chicago at the time. I just started dating my wife now. And, I got the record and she really had no clue of, how much of a, Beatles key, she was getting into, at that point in time. But so that album came out. I remember playing it quite a bit. I remember her not really, she said she liked it, but it wasn't like something that she gravitated towards or whatever like that. So but I'm kind of like the opposite of you guys. It's like I remember liking it, but I kind of like it more now than I did in the past. So for this one, this one has really grown on me quite a bit, because obviously I've been listening to it this last month quite a bit, and songs, I'm liking songs more that I didn't really care for earlier. So
I think
so that's good in a way.
We're gonna get into it, but the suite just really doesn't work together as any sort of integrated whole to me.
Oh no. Oh, we're definitely gonna talk about that for sure. Definitely. Because he loves to talk about how this was, the medley at the end was his first medley since Abbey Road, and I'm just like I keep shaking my head every time I hear that.
Oh yeah, that was aggravating. I remember reading all that hype at the time. Oh, this great medley. I've never done a medley before.
Because there's an interview on the bonus disc here, and then and that's where he talks about it, so but anyways,
on Egypt Station, which works
right exactly, so because I mean they flow well together, those tracks flow well together. Anyway. so So, the, you know, he recorded 9 demos with the band in September 2003. The project was, like we said, was played, put on hold for Chaos, and then they started back up in March of 2006. And an estimated 20 to 25 tracks were recorded. So what else could be out there? I'd like to hear, you know. But yeah, I mean, as we said, it was it's really loud. It's really loud. So, but you know, after it came out, Andy, you actually, you know, from time to time on these releases, he'll do like these secret gigs, and this he did the same thing with this album. And Andy, you got to see one of those secret gigs, right?
I did. I got to see him at the Highline Ballroom, June 14th, 2007. Went with a friend of mine, and we had just been reading on McCartney's forum that this is where it was going to be. Rumored, it wasn't officially disclosed, but if you went to the gig, you know the first 500 people in line would get a wristband and would be given access to the show. So we took a trip into New York on a whim, thinking that it was going to just be, you know, a madhouse on a whatever it was on a Wednesday night. Got there like at 8 o'clock at night. There wasn't a soul there. And saw somebody from the venue and said, "Oh, is this where the McCartney thing is tonight? Where's the line?" They said, "You're it. You're the first two. You're the first two for the line."
Oh, wow.
So he said, "Okay." And then shortly, about an hour or two later, people started coming. And by midnight, it was a line. And my friend and I were the first two on the line. And boy, it was, we waited all night and got our wristband, I think at 11 in the morning from Paul's people. And they said, "Come on back at 6:30. So went, took a nap, went to some family's house, relaxed, went back to the show, and sat. You know, we went into the Highline Ballroom and saw Paul play 14 songs. And he was literally like, you know, 10 feet away from us. It was phenomenal.
Wow.
It was you're never going to get, you know, any closer than that. And it was free. So
right.
We just had
it was a free show.
It was a free show. They gave us the shirt. Yeah, it was tremendous. They gave us the shirt.
Oh, they gave you the shirt as well.
Yeah, they gave us the shirt as well. And on the back, it has the date and stuff of the at the Highline Ballroom. And that was just a, you know, he played I'll Follow the Sun and stuff like that. And it was an excellent, excellent once in a lifetime opportunity that I'll cherish forever.
Yeah, I saw the set list. Not a bad set list. I liked they played Sea Moon back then. And, you know, what, the House of Wax?
House of Wax was great. Dance Tonight. Yeah. It was
Look at that set. It was duplicated at Amoeba. And, of course,
Amoeba a couple weeks later.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, so that's cool. I mean, that's like one of those once-in-a-lifetime, you know, things, you know, trying, you know, seeing the one of those secret gigs, you know, exciting stuff, you know.
Oh, it was, you know, it was so worth, like, you know, sleeping out on a curb for 12 hours, whatever it was. and it was amazing. It was, it really was. It was awesome. Too bad we didn't get any official. What was that?
The London EP, House of Wax, Nod Your Head,
right
tonight. That's still available through iTunes and such.
Okay.
Yes.
Gotcha. All right. Well, let's start going through these tracks here and then talk about each one. That's and if you want, we can do like a little skip or play type thing. You know, if you want to just talk about whether or not you would skip this song or play it. But first track is Dance Tonight. This was the last track recorded for the album. Paul plays all the instruments here. It was the second single, and I believe you've got the picture disc right there, right?
Yeah.
That, Andy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dance
That's
Tonight.
Cool.
Oddly shaped picture disc. Yeah. But
have you played it?
I played it. I played it today, actually.
Okay.
I played it today. It's Dance Tonight on both sides. So it's not. It's.
Oh, no kidding.
It's Dance Tonight on both sides. Yeah. Nice.
It's the same version, because there's also that acoustic version of Dance Tonight, the Paul solo out there.
Yeah, I don't think this was just the standard on both of these.
On both sides, okay.
Interesting. Okay. You know, I know, you know, in the interviews, Paul tells a story about how, you know, he bought this left-handed mandolin, and from there he learned to play he learned how to play it, and from that came the song. For me, this is I've never been able to get in this song, and I still, you know, not getting into this song. Yeah, it's not for me. I mean, for me, like, the lyrics are like the lyrics that Paul could have wrote in 5 minutes, you know, the really simple lyrics, but it's still catchy, you know, for that one. But, you know, I can do without. I usually skip this one. You know, the video is fine too. I don't mind the video, but the song itself just, you know, wasn't something that I, you know, cared for playing. Maybe one day, I don't know. Andy?
Definitely. I enjoy it quite a bit. The only thing I don't like about it is, and I learned this, read this somewhere, that the beginning of the song, which you think is like a drum coming into it, it's actually mm-hmm. his foot tapping. That's how loud this album was mixed. It's his foot tapping at the wow. beginning of that, of the intro of that song. It's not a drum. It's
right. Now, it sounds like a bass drum.
Yeah, no, it
but
isn't.
It's not. It's yeah. his foot. It's his foot, which is crazy. To think about how loud this album was mixed.
Right.
But I love the song. It's classic McCartney in terms of melody.
Yeah.
Maybe a little bit of a lazy lyric, maybe. But I like the fact that he has songs that kind of just comes up out of the spot of nowhere. It's a good right. opener. I thoroughly enjoy it and still do.
I like it.
All right.
It's fun. It's a better version of All Together Now.
Okay. I like that.
and you always have to like the stories of McCartney and the kids. And you know,
oh, yeah.
The beach song. So,
yeah, this is the Beatrice one, you're right.
Right.
And then the video, you know, Michael Gondry, Eternal Sunshine guy, that video is just so cool.
Oh, the one with mm-hmm. Natalie Portman, right?
Natalie Portman, yeah.
And that he filmed it, there's glass, and that he filmed the ghost as a practical effect.
Right, right. So, yeah, I think there's like a making of on YouTube for that video. So check it out. So you're all in on that song, right, Ed?
Yep.
Okay. Good. Next one up is Ever Present Past, which I have the single for right here.
Nice.
And this one I think has House of Wax Live as the B-side. So pretty cool. Again, loud.
Very so loud. So loud.
You know. So, but this is the first single that came out in May of 07. Again, he performs all instruments. This was reading in, you know, in Luca's book that it started off as a song called Perfect Lover during the Chaos Sessions. For me, it's a nice, catchy pop song. I like this one a lot. And, you know, he talks about personal feelings in the song. But this one, I always play. I kind of wish this was would have been the opener, because I really dig this one a lot. But Andy, how do you like this one?
I liked it a lot more then than I do now. It just, the way it just starts is a little bit rough for me. It just kind of comes out of nowhere.
Yeah,
lots of full of hooks and stuff. All the typical stuff that's in a good classic McCartney song. A little bit wordy for me. Definitely liked it a lot more than I do now. So I might be inclined to skip it these days now.
Okay, fair enough. Ed?
I would also say keep it. This is a good track. And a lot of that comes from the video. I love, it's another video that I love. You know, the MC Escher-esque Paul wandering around rooms and crossing through doors.
Right.
And the Robert Palmer-esque dancers behind him.
Yeah, very true. Very true. Very Robert Palmer-esque.
Then the story behind that. Well, first off, it reminds me a little bit of Gotta Sing, Gotta Dance. I got to mention that since I'm a part of that show with us.
Right, yeah.
a better version of Gotta Sing, Gotta Dance. But
Gotta Dance, yeah.
But They had somebody show Paul some dance moves.
Then
Paul
went right.
Sort of did them himself, and then they choreographed it for the dancers.
Yeah. But luckily, this version was minus the.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Luckily, this version was minus the mustache too. So.
Yep. So. But yeah, I like the first two tracks off the album.
Yeah. So, and then, third track, See Your Sunshine. Now this one is just like, when it comes on, you're just like, you know, if you're in front of the speaker, you just get blown right away. It's like, it's really loud. But however, this is another track I really like on the album. Paul performs all the instruments. Now this one did get rejected by Nigel. You know, he does talk about how this was inspired by Heather, and it was funny because he does talk about how, you know, even though a lot of these songs started before Chaos, you know, and he brought them back, he didn't really care what they were about. If he felt it was a good song, he was gonna, you know, leave it on the record, which is right. I do think this is a good good song, and the bass line on this one is one of his bass lines that gets forgotten about, you know. So you listen to this one, check out that bass line, really,
especially at the end, right, how it just
yes mm-hmm. You know, Ed, what about you?
The bass line is what saves the song. The song itself, I could keep it or I can skip it. Blue Eyed Soul, as they say. The other comparison I've heard some people make is that it's almost like a boy band song, and I can see that.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that, because now that you do, I mean, I think you can, you know, see something like that. Absolutely. Andy?
Definitely playing this one. Again, I love I like all the vocals on it too. That kind of just jump all over the place right out of the gate. The first thing you hear, like, oof, like you said, what the hell is this? You know, instantly grabs the listener's attention. Then it kind of goes off into the middle of it's got it chugging along, and then boom, makes a right turn and then they start singing, you know, and it picks up the beat a little bit, starts, daisies in her hair and all that other stuff, the different stuff that he's singing in the lyrics.
Yeah.
I like
that. Yeah, I like that middle eight.
Right, it's like a quasi.
That middle eight with the daisy. Right, I like that one a lot. Yeah, I like that part of the song.
Picks up daisies in the field, something like that.
Yeah,
I like it, and the bass playing phenomenal on it. So yeah, this is a highlight on the album for sure.
But only Paul McCartney can get away with that glad sad rhyme.
Yes.
Agree with you 110% on that one.
Okay.
Next track, Only Mama Knows, which, you know, it's sometimes it's frustrating because, you know, Paul's rock potential, and then a lot of times we just don't get that hard rock from Paul like we more often in the 70s. So this is the first song on the album that we get the band, Rusty A. Brian Wicks, you know, described as a short story was what she describes it on the CD. I dig the orchestration before and after of the song. However, with this really good rocker, there's one thing missing in my opinion, and that's a kick-ass guitar solo. You know, it's just, you know, my opinion, it's lacking. That's the only thing it's really lacking. And we all know Paul or Brian or Rusty, they're all like, capable of doing good guitar solos. But,
I mean, there's not a bona fide solo in it, but there's some good guitar playing.
There's not. No, there's some great guitar playing in it, but you need like that break, you know, like that Jimmy Junior's Farm kind of style guitar solo. And it's just in my opinion, it's what Let Me Roll It doesn't have. Let Me Roll It's a great song, but it's just that same damn guitar lick throughout the whole song. And that, you know, talking about a song dying for a guitar solo or a change of pace, you know, that's the song. But Andy, how about you, my friend?
Love it. I actually like it better live. I think it came across as a better live track when he played it. He played it when I saw him at Citi Field in 2009 in New York, and it was in his set list then at the time. And I think it works better. It sounds a little bit better live. Again, just again, maybe that's one of the reasons why I don't play the album as much. Is it's just I can't get over this. I can't get around the sonics in a lot of these songs. They're just it's just too the brick walling. I just can't. Right. But it's a great song. Some of the better lyrics on the album, On the Road, No ETA. Oh, that's a good one. You know.
Right.
You know, I like the lyrics in this one are actually pretty clever. I like this one quite a bit, but I prefer it live.
Yeah. Ed?
Yeah, no, I agree with you. It's better on the Amoeba album, and it's better on the London EP from iTunes. I also agree it's Junior's Farm Light, and that's a shame. Right. It just relies far too much on that one riff.
Right. So. Yeah, I agree. And, I think it's definitely missing, you know, a solo, but I mean the lyrics, like you said, Andy, I think are solid, and you know the riff, you know itself, I mean it is solid, but
the lyrics, yeah. Are good, but the story goes nowhere.
Yeah, there's like no conclusion really.
Exactly, you know, it's like
you know, okay. But it's kind of missing, like you know where you know Old Siam Sir, you know it has that you know. That riff throughout the song, but then it, you know, during the chorus, I mean, it breaks into a whole nother, you know, thing, and a lot of times some of the songs are missing something like that, and I think that's what the song is missing. But
you can compare it to like Biker Like an Icon. There's a story right. song that resolves itself. This just
yeah, right. yeah, yeah. This one doesn't resolve itself. Very good point.
Good
there,
point.
Ed.
All right. Yeah. Next up is the track called You Tell Me. This is another one that features the band. On the interview, he describes it as a tribute to summers, but it doesn't really have that summer song feel to it, you know, in my opinion. You know, we all know he loves birds, so you got, you know, more birds and you know, in throughout the songs on this one, you know, I got hummingbirds and cardinals. Unfortunately, this one's not really a favorite of mine. The way he sings the song, I don't think his voice is really, you know, unfortunately, you know, he has a great falsetto voice, but it doesn't work for every song, and I don't think it works for this one. And so I usually skip this one. So Ed, how do you feel about this one?
I lean towards skip. There's a couple of good parts to it. I get the wistfulness a little bit more than you do, I think. Some people have theorized that this is a song about Linda. I could see that, maybe. I mean, especially if you know, he was going through the divorce at the time.
Right.
But, yeah, you can. I would say this is one that could be skipped safely.
Okay. Andy?
Skip.
Okay. That's it? That's all you got?
I never liked it. It just meanders too long. He's trying too hard with that kind of falsetto, which doesn't suit him on this track. It just it got some great falsetto songs, but this is not one of them. So, yeah, this was cringeworthy listening to that again today. Ay.
I mean, we say but his singing on this disc is very good throughout the whole thing.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, yeah, it is.
Agree
but not
with you 100%.
Yeah, not on that track. Yeah.
This not is, that. I think, probably the one of the very few small points on the album for me is just his vocals for that song. So
yes,
it's unfortunate.
Yeah.
But next track, you're looking at Mr. Bellamy. You know, for me, this is it's one of the more interesting musically songs on the album. You know, it's kind of, you know, I wouldn't say that it's really like, you know, that song, Genesis song, Harold the Barrel at all, but I mean, it's kind of a little bit got that, you know, got that feel to it a little bit. But yeah, but you know, I love the jazzy feel music. You know, towards the end of the song, I think the last minute of it has more of a jazzy feel to it, and I really dig that. And I love the two perspectives. You know, I love the deeper vocals from Paul. You know, yeah. You know, as the people that are down below, like you know, police or firemen or whatnot. And then, I think it's a pretty good story song as well. So I tend to always play this, and you know, I like it. You know, Andy.
exquisitely British. The opening yeah. track, you hear those horns. You're like, okay, this is right. a song by Paul McCartney. You hear those horns, and you're instantly. That was the first thing that hooked me with this song. I'm like, ooh, this is going to be a good song. I knew it the minute that I heard it. I said, this is going to be a good song. One of his better story songs right. too, like the perspectives being told.
Right.
I've read that it's about a cat. Actually, not somebody jumping. I've seen a cat. It's not about a person jumping, but the perspectives and the whole steady lads and all that stuff. I've always dug that bit. And then at the end of the song, it goes into that other kind of place where it just kind of just fades out. So a lot going on in this song, and on a couple, 3 or 4 minutes, but. Probably my top two or three songs on the album for sure.
Oh, no shit. Great.
Yep. Cool. Definitely. Okay. Love Mr. Bellamy.
All right. Ed?
Yeah, no, keep it. It does sound and feel a little bit like a Radiohead track to me.
Mm.
And then there's the incidental stuff. Someone discovered that Mr. Bellamy, if you spell out Mr., is an anagram for Mills Betray Me.
Jeez.
Isn't the album title supposed to be an anagram too?
Yes, there's an anagram. I was going to talk about that as well. Yes.
It's supposed. Yeah. Well, what is it supposed to be?
Yeah.
I forget. I
didn't write it.
I remember at the time it was supposed to stand for something.
Right. Right.
I can't remember.
Yeah. I'll bring it up here in a second.
Yeah,
so.
Bring it up.
And then the other thing is there's a famous bit of pop art from 1961 by Lichtenstein. You know, the big pop art guy with the dots and the bright colors, where you have this lieutenant saying, "I'm supposed to report to Mr. Bellamy. I wonder what he's like." Is that what Paul was thinking of?
Could be.
Because he's an art fan, and he knows Lichtenstein, and I know he's familiar with that type of work, but
yeah,
very possible.
So go ahead, finish up.
He says that the name was just a name, but again, Eleanor Rigby is sitting on a tomb.
Right, exactly. Right. So the anagram is for my soulmate LLM.
That's what it was.
So interesting. You know, he says that that was if you don't look into that, because I'm sure he didn't think
in the midst of the divorce with that battle axe, how could you? I'm sure that's what right. he was thinking about.
Oh man.
All right.
So moving on. All right, gratitude. Now here's another one. Unfortunately, that is a lower point
skip,
for me on the
skip,
album.
Skip.
Anyways, he performs all instruments on this one. The interview on the CD is so interesting because he just goes right into talking about channeling his inner Elvis and Little Richard for some reason. And, maybe that's what he's thinking about when he's singing the song, maybe Little Richard or Elvis. Maybe you get a little bit more Little Richard when he's singing the song than Elvis. But the thing too, it's the song's only 3 minutes and 19 seconds, but it just feels like it goes on forever.
Yeah.
It just really drags, in my opinion.
Oh.
But and then the gratitude, at the start of it, I'm really not a big fan of that either. But Ed, your thoughts?
Yep, it's a lesser starting over.
Yeah. All right, Nandy, you're a skip too, I take it.
I'm a skip. There are some redeeming qualities to the track. Actually, the last maybe minute or so, it kind of reprises a little bit, and some of the vocals are good on it, but that you hear the track, and he's, and again, at like level 1,000, you're hearing gratitude, and you're like, no.
Right.
And, oh.
Right. Right, right. So moving on, then we get to the famous medley where This is the first medley since Abbey Road.
Abbey Road, yeah, you know, just totally forget, totally forgetting the best medley.
Yeah, don't forget
ever.
Oh, please, come on, Ed. Yes or no on the medley at the end of Red Rose Speedway?
Say it.
Yes. Yeah.
Win. Thank you, Ed. Thank you.
Look at the time. All right. Anyways. Okay. So this starts off the medley, Vintage Clothes. I love this. The first couple tracks on it, I think, are just brilliant stuff. You know, I love it. I mean, simple lyrics again, but musically, I think it kicks ass. I love the whole "Don't live in the past" line. He does this with the band, and I don't know if you're familiar with the Fleetwood Mac song "Say You Love Me," but if you listen to that opening piano riff to that song, it feels like this is a complete knockoff to that, in my opinion. But nonetheless, it's a brilliant song, in my opinion. You know, he's got that funny, really cool bass stuff going on in there, and I really like this one a lot. And Ed?
Yeah, no, the first two pieces of the medley I like, and I wish the rest of it had been that good. But right. The lyrics are great, the track is great, it's fun right. to listen to.
Right, and then these first two, and then we'll talk about the other one in a second. It's just like they blend like a medley almost should, yes. in a way, and kind of the third one as well. But after that, I mean, it's nothing. But Andy,
yeah, no, I love Vintage Clothes. First time I heard it, first thing I thought of it, this sounds like a Wings song. It sounds like a Wings track. Okay. The harmonies on, especially towards the end, "Don't live in the past" and all those kind of vocals at the end. I instantly thought this could have been a Wings song. I can't add to it any more than what you guys said. I agree with you on point with that one. One of the highlights of the album.
Yeah. And then, you know, then it goes really great into "That Was Me," which is, again, I think another highlight of the album. You know, Paul was really, you know, either looking back or looking at himself, you know, looking to the future a lot on this album, and this is no exception. But again, another terrific underrated or overlooked bass line on this song that people need to look at. You know, song full of memories. I love how it starts off as a childhood and gradually, you know, the lyrics, you know, and then it goes up to probably, you know, with the ending of the Beatles. But or you know, getting married to Linda, you know. So, but another brilliant song, in my opinion. This is a keeper for me always. Andy,
definitely a keeper. Loved the history tracing. You know, "That Was Me" in the cellar. Of course, he's talking about the cavern.
Right.
All those references down memory lane make this one a keeper for me. Good little groove in it too. You know.
Right.
And it's a switch, you know, Vintage Clothes into "That Was Me," which, and they link together quite well.
Yeah, they do. Yeah.
They link together quite well. Can't say the rest of that with the rest of the medley, but these two link together quite well.
Right. Ed?
Yeah, no, I agree. "Sweating cobwebs." What a great line.
Right.
This seems to be the song that Ringo keeps trying to write, you know.
Very good point, observation there, Ed.
The only shortcoming is that it sounds a little bit too much like "Summer '59."
Okay, fair enough.
How many times is Ringo gonna like try to rewrite the same song about, you know, being in the Beatles?
About four. the thing, the "Summer '59" thing, that's acceptable. It was a B-side, which hasn't been released anywhere else, but I like that song a lot too.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I love, you know, Royal Iris, "On the River," Mersey Beaton with the band, you know, I mean, just a lot of cool stuff throughout that song. And then it just like it stops, and then there's like really no flow to the next song for that one. Well, no, I'm sorry, it's the next one, but it's connected though, but it just does the way it's connected just doesn't make any sense in my opinion. But that's Feet in the Clouds, which, you know, unfortunately I like the song, but if I was to pick like a least favorite in the five, this one would be it. I like the nice acoustic opening. However, those damn robotic harmonies just really annoy me. And then the very, 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 very,
I was going to ask you,
it's very repetitive. So I do play it, but I get annoyed with it. So but Ed, how do you feel?
First off, it reminds me of Tough on a Tightrope. Kind of with the way it's
okay right
off, I think Paul had been listening to John's John Sinclair, you know, Got to.
We get it. You got to set him free. Okay.
Yeah.
It could have been a lot better, but it ends up as
right. The robotic harmonies for me, I think, just really, I can deal with the very, very, you know, the 100 varies, but once you get to that robotic style, you know, harmonies, then that just really, unfortunately, just doesn't do it for me. That's where I sign off. But Andy?
Next track.
Okay, and really interesting track here. Again, so this one comes to a complete stop, and then it goes into House of Wax, which, again, doesn't really feel like a medley, you know, when you're listening to the album. So House of Wax, you know, there's some great guitar playing throughout this song. He plays it with the band. You know, when I listen to it, I feel like production-wise, it could have been on All Things Must Pass. It just has that like wall of sound, you know, feel to me. I play it, great guitar work throughout. So we know Paul loves playing guitar. So I think, you know, the solos that he performs on. I think it's Paul on this one.
Okay.
You know, and I think it's great. I think it's because he probably plays it on the album, but live I would, you know, you would probably remember if Rusty played it.
Yes,
you know,
did.
That's the solo. So, but how do you like this one, Andy?
Oh, House of Wax for me is probably one of the best songs McCartney's written in the last 20 years.
Oh wow!
I heard it. I'm like, this is going to be a classic. I liked it a lot. I think it's as good as anything from over the last 20 years. The guitar work in it, I remember him talking about it, saying how in the interview it was one that he would enjoy playing live, and thankfully I got to see him play it live. It's a lot going in it. Dark, mysterious tone, good. Kind of like a horror film thing. I love everything about it. The screeching vocals on it during the choruses, and then kind of going into that killer guitar solo towards the end, just shredding it.
Right.
And wildly just fades away.
Lyrically, it's really interesting too. You know, thunder drowns, the trumpet blasts. You know, poets scatter through the night. You know, but they can only dream of flight away from their confusion. Really cool stuff.
Yeah, and I just like the build up to the choruses. You know, buried deep below, thousand layers.
Right.
Know.
Yeah.
That build up is very exciting to listen to. So that's
agreed.
What caught my ear. Yeah.
Agreed, 100%. Ed.
Well, I go the other way. It's not to my taste, although I do like it live. I like the live version on the Amoeba album. The other thing, you mentioned a horror film. It all gets conflated because out at roughly the same time was that dreadful Paris Hilton vehicle, House of Wax. And I always put the song and that movie, they just come flying together whenever I hear the song. It's like, man, that was an awful film. but the live version is I actually like. I think it's the production which I just don't really care for on the record.
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay. Well, again, and then we switch to the song that I think, you know, everybody, you know, when they hear it for the first time or whenever you hear it, I think it, you know, stops everybody in their tracks. It's a really, you know, moving, touching song. I would never have expected to hear Paul do a song like this myself, but, you know, when I hear it, it still moves me. That's, The End of the End. Again, he performs all the songs. He performs all the instruments on this track, and, you know, and it's got that Irish wake. He talks about, you know, somebody wishing him a good death, you know, and, you know, talking about what he would like to, you know, have done on the day that he dies, which is just, you know, when you're listening to it, you just, you know, can't believe it.
Yeah.
You know, but go ahead, Andy.
No, I agree with you 1,000% on this one. Very sentimental. You know, you listen to it, you hear those strings, and he starts singing on the day that I die. I want jokes to be told. And that's, right. You know, I think a lot of people probably feel that way. Right. It's something that he hadn't really sung about before on record before this. No. So, right.
Well,
you know,
that day is done.
Yeah, true. Yeah, that day is done. But this one's so personal. On the day that I die, you know, it takes it to a whole other thing. I mean, I think it's if the album ended this with that, that would have been great, but it didn't.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a second.
But I love The End of the End. I think it's
but Ed.
Yeah, no, you know, you can't help but love the film, love the song. I agree that it might have made a good end, but I also see where Paul's coming from. You can't end on a sad note like this. You can't leave everyone going off and it's like,
yeah, well, like on a whole down note. Yeah, fair point.
Yeah, and that's what Paul talks about in the interview disc. It's just like, you know, it in a way it is. Yeah, it's a cool closer, I think, but it's such a downer. You can't have a downer track close it. So what do we get? We get a under 2 minute song. Nod Your Head.
That, the piano on this track is the Lady Madonna piano that Paul is playing.
On the End of the End.
Yeah, on The End of the End.
Okay.
A little bit of trivia, but it's interesting. The tones are so different, but it's the same piano.
Cool.
Really? Oh, I didn't know that. Very cool.
All right.
Very cool. Thank you. So yeah, the Nod Your Head, which is just a quick little, you know, rocker, which, you know, unfortunately, you know, again, Paul performs all the instruments on that one, but unfortunately that one just doesn't do anything for me. So I usually will skip this one, but Andy, what are your thoughts?
It was enjoyable live, because, you know, I saw him live and I like it on that context. But in terms of an album closer, if he had kind of done more of like a Great Day thing, a little more simple acoustic thing, that would have been a nicer way to kind of tie a bow on Memory Almost Full. Nod Your Head. It's just not I know what he was trying to do. He was trying to pick everybody up after like a maudlin song. Right. I get it. Mm. But he could have done it in a little bit of a better way, I think, you know.
Right.
Agreed.
Right. Ed?
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And actually, what I would have done is I would have put Why So Blue here.
Yes.
Know? Yeah.
That would serve that well. And then if you still want to have a little bit of Nod Your Head, just fade in 30 seconds of it.
Oh, yeah, kind of like a hidden track or something.
Yeah.
There you go.
That's how I would have programmed the record.
Kind of just, like a Cosmically Conscious, maybe?
Yeah, like that. I mean, the other thing about Nod Your Head is it reminds me of Night Out, which I just heard at that time.
Yeah. His vocals, his vocals are very impartial to your Abracadabra as well. You know, that rough sounding vocal, which I think really fits for Nod Your Head, but it also fits for Impartial, you know, to your Abracadabra. But you know, getting to you know, Disc Who, you mentioned Why So Blue. There's three tracks that are on the bonus disc. You got In Private, which is a pretty nice instrumental. You got Why So Blue, which again, he has this habit of leaving great songs off of albums, you know, and this is no exception in my opinion. And then you got 222, which is, you know, has some lyrics lyrics, but it's almost more instrumental than song, which I think is a nice nice feel as well. But Why So Blue, great track, I think. And I mean, it's, why wasn't this one on the album?
Yeah, that one. Well, yeah, too. That should have been. That needed to be on the album for sure. Not.
But I don't know. Yeah, but I don't know about a closer though, Ed. I mean, you think this would have been a better closer?
But just as a closer coming after End of the End, you know, it's like right. Okay, the end. It's like no, don't go away, sad. Well, Why So Blue? You know.
Right. So in a way, maybe that whole medley should have closed side one.
Yeah,
you know what I mean,
right?
And then, you know, flip it over, and then you get, you know, more of a, you know, more of a upbeat, because this album is more of a happy sounding, you know, upbeat record as opposed to the Chaos was, you know, very, the tone is completely different than Chaos was.
Totally.
So yeah. You know, but so let's say where you guys rank this in McCartney's career. Do you put this in the top half or second half of his discography, Ed?
Top half. This is the probably the lesser of the post Flowers in the Dirt era, with only Driving Rain beneath it, but it's still a good record, I think. I think Paul's been on a run really for the last 25, 30
yeah.
years.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. Andy?
Probably bottom of the top half, if that makes sense. You know, like, you know, not you know, not up here. The way I break it down is I kind of go from Driving Rain to now over the last. So if I'm ranking those from Driving Rain, this, Chaos, I probably go Chaos, New, Egypt Station, Memory Almost Full, and then Driving Rain.
Ah,
that's where I would class it in that context.
Which is more or less what I just said as well. So
exactly.
Right. Yeah. Well, I would mix. I'd probably put Egypt Station up higher.
Well, than... we know you love Egypt Station. Yeah.
Yes. Thank you very much.
Well, listen, we're gonna have a show on New, and we're gonna have Ethan on there. And wait,
absolutely,
Ethan loves absolutely. New. So,
yeah, no, I love New too, but I just think Egypt Station's a little bit more interesting, you know, musically. You know,
all right, listen, whatever, I knocked you out for off the ground and made you a believer.
Oh, you knocked me out, really?
Yes, I did. Bam!
You did not win that battle, my friend.
What do we think that is? I heard a. Someone thinking that that was a room number in a hotel.
That's what it sounds like, right?
Right. Well, I mean, lyrically, you just got, you know, look at that, look at her walking, turning my head, you know, taking my breath away. You know, what does that mean? Just going, heading to the hotel room or something, which happened to be 222?
It's what it sounds like.
What he's saying at the very end, the very last words he's whispering.
Come on to me.
To me, yes. Well, there you go.
Yeah, let's also bring up another track that was recorded right around the same time, and that comes from London Underground, and we're talking about My Soul, which was you know, a collaboration with how do you pronounce his name, Nitin Sawhney.
Yeah.
So this is I really like the track a lot. I mean, I don't know if it was recorded during the same sessions as Memory Almost Full, Ed, but I think it was.
I think it was around the same time. Nitin Sawhney is a producer, so I mean,
right,
he plays with McCartney on the track, but it is a McCartney track, and it is the most honest that he ever really was about the breakup with Heather Mills. If you look at the lyrics.
Right.
There's some really, really so cool production tricks that reminds me a little bit of Back to the Egg. You know, there's some panning from right to left, and there's some broadcast effects in it. It's separate from the song. I like the production. It's a great song.
Yes, I agree. It is a great song. It's one of my favorite songs that he sings on somebody else's record. You know, even though this is very much a McCartney song, I mean, it's still on somebody else's record.
Right.
But definitely a top five song for me.
Like that Steve Martin song. Like that.
Yeah, Best Love. Yeah, Best Love.
Oh, yeah.
I really like that song.
Yeah. And that is my favorite song that he sings for somebody else's record.
Tom loves Best Love.
Yeah. Great, great track. Andy, what do you think about My Soul?
I love it. I love that track. In fact, I totally forgot about it. I remember hearing about it at the time, but then until we talked about it earlier, I totally forgot about it. I knew about it at the time, but then I just forgot about it. Hearing it again, that one really should have been on the album. That would have been great if that worked that one on there. But some of his best stuff, as we've learned, is on other people's albums, and that's one of them.
Right. The title of the album, Memory Almost Full, kind of interesting. I mean, I've never really had a problem with, using something like that from your phone, but I don't know if it's as original as it could be, but I still think it's an okay title of an
okay
album.
Title, but could have been a better cover though with the chair. Come on.
Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah. I mean, that was the start of Paul not wanting to show himself on the cover of his albums.
Right.
He better do that for McCartney 3.
I don't know. I'm beginning to think that the die has something to do with the cover.
I do like how if you flip it over, you do have McCartney's image, on there. But
whoop-de-doo,
But it was also the you need to buy four different versions of the album.
Right.
When McCartney had gone from the you need to buy all 600 copies of the single to what does make you buy four or five or six copies of the album to get everything?
Right. So you found the vinyl. When did you find the vinyl there, Andy?
The same year. The same year it came out. Okay. 1899.
Was that just pressed in the UK or was it pressed here too?
No, here.
Do you know? Okay.
Yeah, here. This was an American pressing. So,
That's the one to listen to because it does not suffer from the loudness because you can see the brick walling on.
Right. The vinyl version is better to listen to for sure. That's what I listened to today.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Cool.
Have you looked to see how much it goes for now, Tom, or no?
Hundreds. Just like really? Driving rain, a hundred, couple hundred here and there. Yeah. It just depends on who's selling it.
Yeah.
So because that's still right in that area where vinyl was still, not really.
Before it started his comeback.
Right.
It wasn't really fully fledged yet coming back.
Right. Until about 2010, 2011 when it slowly started creeping up. But good stuff. Cover, I mean, fan of the cover, different cover. What do we think of the cover, Ed?
It's okay. I would have gone with something else. I would have preferred an older picture of McCartney if he really doesn't want to show himself at that age, and that was still 15 years ago now,
Right. But, Andy?
Yeah, definitely could have been a better cover. Even maybe just another piece of his own original artwork, like he did with the Egypt Station.
Even the shot behind me, I think, might have made a better cover.
Right. Yeah. That would have been a better cover. That would have been a better cover, too. Or maybe even like something like on my shirt, maybe with that design or something. Yeah. I don't know. Right. But, it's not like Chaos, which has a classic photo. It just seems a little bit lazy.
Right. So the album... went to number three here in the States. I think it debuted at number three. And then it went to number five in the UK. So it did okay. I mean, his albums were debuting really good, except for I think Driving Rain was the one that I think didn't debut that well. So of all these albums that he's been putting out over the last 20, 25 years, they've been debuting,
very well.
Very well. So, but great. Anybody else want to add any last minute stuff to Memory Almost Full?
I think it did well initially because those baristas in Starbucks, like Ed was saying, they were just forced to play it all day long. So people were buying copies of it. I mean, it was, I mean, it was, and that was a big deal too. We didn't really talk about this, but this was the first album on McCartney's Concord label leaving Capitol. He'd left. He'd felt that Capitol did not do well by him with Chaos, and he went and joined up Hear Music, and this was the beginning of a new era for him with his titles, and eventually 3 years later with the Archive series starting all on Concord. But this was the first one to come out on that label. So historic in that terms, because it was the beginning of that, but short-lived, as we know. He went back to EMI happily. Right. So.
It was very easy. Go ahead, Ed.
Hear Music doesn't even exist anymore. Starbucks is out of the music business.
Right. Okay. Right.
As you may or may not remember, the whole deal was this was before people had CD burners commonly in their homes. So before there was iTunes and before streaming was worldwide, what Starbucks wanted you to do, and the idea behind the Hear Music label, was you would go into a Starbucks and they would have a machine. You could just do your own mix CDs, hit a button, and out would spit your
interesting
your mix. Yeah,
right. Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it was not a bad idea to him to, you know, do the Starbucks. I mean, the CD was very easily accessible. You know, I mean, there's a Starbucks, as we all know, I mean, there's a Starbucks on every street corner, you know, and back then you going into them, if everyone is selling them, and then, like you said, they're playing it nonstop, you know, the first couple weeks that that the album comes out, you know. So, I mean, kind of almost like the same thing that Kiss did when they signed with, they did the one album deal with Walmart, where Walmart just had the exclusive to that album. Only Walmart could sell that album. So, you know, and it did well, you know. So, I mean, everybody and their mother's going to Walmart, you know.
EMI even partnered with Hear Music. There was a John Lennon Greatest Hits that was out on Hear Music in Starbucks. So,
right. Interesting. Cool. Yeah. All right. Cool. Ed, do you have any last minute thoughts on the album?
Nope. I think we about covered it. I think we're all glad that Heather is no longer in the picture. This is the better of the two Heather Mills influenced albums, but maybe because he was good with her.
Right.
Maybe. Absolutely. Cool. All right. Well, thank you. So, Ed, give us the rundown on When They Was Fab, you know, when we can hear it and where we can find it and all that stuff.
When They Was Fab is out every Monday morning, Sunday night, depending upon whether you're in the States or overseas in Europe. As we're recording this, the show that just went out is on John Lennon compilation. So that's why I had that little tidbit. Up off the top of my head with Anthony Rotuno, our friend from the other side of the pond.
Yes. Yep.
We can be found at whenthewasfab.podbean.com, and that's about it.
Cool. Very good. Andy, anything you want to add to before we close the show?
Just thank you to everybody again for watching our videos. We are weekly. We drop our episodes every Saturday morning at 10 a.m. on all platforms. And the YouTube one is the one, I mean, that I kind of focus in on and zero in on. And we are growing our content on there and our subscribers. So thank you, those who watch, and let us know how we're doing or what you don't like about us. And that's fine, too.
That's fine. Yeah, like Andy said, you know, we're having a good time. We're getting a lot of shows out weekly now. A lot of shows coming up. I'm proud to say that I just booked drummer Dave Maddox, which will be on a show in November. So we'll get to talk about some 80s songs with him. Very, very versatile drummer. I mean, I was checking out more of his discography and checking out this band that he was part of called the Fairpoint convention during the late 60s, early 70s.
Fairport,
you know, British folk folk rock band. Really cool stuff. And I ordered one of the CDs, so looking forward to listening to more of them. And
on Discogs or eBay?
My local record store, my friend.
So your long humor show is great, by the way.
Oh, thank you very much. Really appreciate it.
Everyone has had Lawrence on, but yours was particularly good.
Oh, thank you, Ed.
Thank you. I'm really proud that we asked him more than just wings questions. You know, he's done so many great things. You know, and that deserves some mentions as well too. But when you know, the Muppet Show thing or the Muppet movie thing, when he said that he did the banjo, I mean, that was the one that really just
for the Rainbow Connection.
You know, for Rainbow Connection, yeah, that was the one that would just really, you know, put a smile on my face. But thank you for that. I appreciate that
he worked with George Harrison. I mean, you know, people just don't.
No, they don't, and that's what sucks about only having an hour with him was that we literally had 2 hours worth of questions for him, but you know, it's just that hour goes by so quickly.
A half hour spent on his background and what he's done, and then before you know it, the hour's up. You know.
Yep.
Yeah. So, but yeah, he was definitely very gracious, and we look forward to having him back on in the future. Maybe we can get back to the, you know, him working with George on the Shanghai Surprise project, you know, which was, you know, and then, you know, I would definitely want to talk to the drummer Dave Maddox, because he worked with George, on two albums as well. So, you know, a lot of questions for him there as well. So, but anyways, you can find us on Andy said, YouTube. Check out our YouTube channel, Two Legs a Paul McCartney Podcast. Please subscribe to that. You can find us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Two Legs Podcast. You can email us at twolegpodcast@gmail.com. And as Andy said, we are everywhere. We're on every platform.
And our website.
And our website, twolegspodcast.com. You can find our shows there as well. So please check that out. So for my friend Andy, my friend Ed, I'm Tom, and as always, everybody out there, have a great day and a beautiful night. Take care.
You've been listening to Two Legs, a Paul McCartney podcast, hosted by Tom Hunyadi and Andy Nichols, with musical contributions by Dylan Seaton.